from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, teenage prostitution on the streets of Oakland. The East Bay City is known as a hotspot for trafficking of teenage girls, turning tricks for cash right out in the open. Well, after a six-month investigation, Youth Radio brings us their voices and dramatic stories of how they got involved in prostitution, how their pimps exploit them, and the harm they face if they defy them or fail to bring in enough cash. We'll talk with one of the reporters who uncovered their stories, and as always, we'll take your calls and comments. We'll get started with Forum right after this. Good morning and welcome to this hour of Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Well, it happens right out in the open on the streets of Oakland and at online sites like Craigslist. Teenage girls skipping out of high school and selling themselves for sex. Often they're forced into it by pimps who threaten them with violence if they fail to bring in enough cash. Their stories have been uncovered during a six-month investigation by Youth Radio as part of a two-part series called Trafficked. Here's a short excerpt from one of the stories that aired this week on All Things Considered. It's reported by Youth Radio's Denise Tejada.
Darlene and Brittany were in middle school when Oakland was named one of the hotspots for child prostitution. As they entered their teens, classmates talked about boyfriends who had lots of money, and like most kids in the Bay Area, they listened to music by Oakland rappers whose lyrics about pimping glamorized the game.
In Oakland, all day long, be pimping these hoes from dusk till dawn, making cash real fast, and you know it's on.
A lot of it is glorified.
Yeah. Oh, you're from Oakland. Everybody has dreads. Everybody goes dumb. We pop pills.
Smoke a lot of weed.
Smoke a lot of weed. Parties, sideshows, and hoes.
And joining us this hour to talk about her investigation into underage sex trafficking in Oakland is Denise Tejada from Youth Radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us in the studio, Charmaine Bach. She is an assistant district attorney in charge of special operations and policy development, also the head of the Human Exploitation and Trafficking Watch Unit with the Alameda County DA's office. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
Denise, let me begin with you. Tell us a little bit more about this two-part series. What was the inspiration for it?
When we met Darlene and Brittany, one of the things that they said was they wanted to get this story out there, not only because they were so young and they were sexually exploited at such a young age, but because they also wanted to show parents, hey, this could happen to kids out there. You don't have to be part of a lifestyle. Like Brittany, she got into it when she was kidnapped. Just walking the streets in Oakland. So that was the inspiration behind it and making sure that we told that story the way they wanted it.
And we should say, we'll hear a little bit more from them later in the hour from your story, but they left the business, if you will, and they're now working with a nonprofit.
I know that they left the business. It's probably been about a year since they left. I know that they do some community work. I'm not exactly sure, what it is, but that's part of our confidentiality, that we're not releasing a lot of information, but yeah, they've been out for about a year.
What sort of ideas did you have about this topic going into it? And how did it change as you got to know these young women?
I should say I'm only 22 years old, so I obviously had a bad perception of it, and not only because I grew up in a place where I grew up in Richmond, so violence is always a part of that lifestyle. So I had a very negative perception, and never really wanted to even speak to one. I had a bad judgment, so I went knowing that I had that perception. So I was, It was a new experience. I was welcoming this new experience. And these girls have definitely changed the way I think, the way I speak about of a person. I'm definitely deleting the B word out of my vocabulary. So they're such a huge inspiration, not only because I'm only 2 years apart from them, but it's...
What is it that's inspiring?
the genuine, when they speak, they speak with empowerment. Despite everything that they've been through, they still are looking forward and they're still pursuing their dreams and they're not letting their past dictate their future. And so I think I'm just very proud to be a part of, you know, and also allowing them to feel confident enough to trust me in telling this story. But just the strength that they have, and I kind of envy that. But they're so strong.
And when you say you admire them, you're talking now about Brittany and
Darlene.
And Darlene who left.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you also talked with some young women who are still in the business. We're going to hear from them in a bit. But what about those girls?
I didn't get to speak to them. Darlene actually did the interviews.
She did the interviews.
Mm-hmm. I never met the girls. I just heard the interviews that that she got. And it's saddening. It's very disappointing to see that, you know, young girls think that this is the only way that they can make money, that because they don't have a high school diploma, they're still in high school, but because they don't have a high school diploma, they feel like they don't have opportunities out there. And it's so disappointing because there are opportunities out there. So I feel like we need to reach out to those girls and show them.
And Charmaine Bach, what attitude, I guess, does the Alameda County DA's office take toward this? And how do you work with the Oakland Police Department to deal with it?
Well, we see these girls as victims first and foremost. And we work with the Oakland Police Department and other law enforcement agencies, not just in Alameda County, but throughout the Bay Area. Our Heat Watch program provides a multidisciplinary, multi-jurisdictional, collaborative response to combating child sex trafficking in the Bay Area and was recently awarded a federal grant to do so. We see them as victims, and our goal is really fivefold. One, to change community awareness surrounding the issue. And just like Darlene said, she doesn't really want to use the B word anymore.
Denise,
sorry, excuse me. We don't want to use the P word either. Prostitution is a misnomer for what's going on because these girls aren't prostitutes or prostituted. They're victims of exploitation.
And you think that's true across the board?
I do with the minor population. And largely, when you look at when you look at the victimology of these girls, you see that 80% of them are runaways, 60-some percent of them have been sexually exploited once or before in their life. What I believe is that many of them are looking for love in all the wrong places. In our schools, we teach English and math and science, assuming you go to school, but we don't teach what love looks like. So though they might think they're going for the money, many of them are lured by the Romeo pimp. They're lured by the boyfriend who manipulates them, and they go for the younger children. And so our approach takes that into consideration and tries to raise awareness.
You mentioned that phrase, Romeo pimp, and I want to play another cut from Denise's story that explains what that means a little bit.
Oakland police say most teenage girls get into prostitution the way Darlene did, through a boyfriend they trust, who turns out to be a pimp. They call them Romeo pimps because they can sweet talk a girl into anything.
When it comes to pimping hoes, I've been truly educated because I'm so slick. I make hoes turn tricks. Players University, class of 86.
Darlene moved in with her 18-year-old boyfriend after her mother's boyfriend kicked her out of the house.
Then, like, on my 15th birthday, he was like, well, you know, since you're going to be staying with me and stuff, we need more food. We need to find a way to get some money. And he's the one that, like, introduced me to prostitution. And I didn't see anything wrong with it.
Again, an excerpt from Traffic, that two-part series from Youth Radio. Denise Tejada, as we just heard that one young woman, Darlene, talking about the Romeo pimp kind of seducing her into this world. Is that a typical story, do you think?
I think it's, for some girls, it can be. I think when you meet this, especially when they say like your high school crush, when you meet that guy and he tells you all these sweet things to you and tells you that you're the best thing he's ever had, then of course you kind of feel flattered and you start believing him. And to the point where you don't trust your own instincts no more. And so I've seen that in some of my friends when I was in high school. And so I can say that that's common for some girls in high school.
But when you say a high school crush, I mean, some of these pimps are not in high school. Many of them are in their 20s and even 30s, right?
Well, some of them, through the conversations we've had with some of the girls, a lot of these guys are in fact in high school. You know, Darlene's boyfriend at that time, he was 18. And so he was still either just graduated from high school or was still in high school. So, I mean, pimps are definitely getting younger through some of the findings we've found.
And let's hear another clip now, because there are a number of, we heard that clip referring to Romeo pimps, the kind of sweet-talking guys who seduce these young women. But there are other kinds known as guerrilla pimps. Let's listen to this clip.
I had got kidnapped when I was 15. I decided to cut school one day. I was in Oakland on Havens Court and Foothill, and all I heard was, "Man, go get that girl." And one of them came out and dragged me by my hair and pulled me into the car.
Brittany says she was gang raped by at least six men. She was put on the street in Sacramento by one of them, a 32-year-old who became her pimp. He took her phone, told her not to talk to anyone but Johns, and had his sister watch her so she wouldn't run. She was shuttled back and forth to work Oakland's red light district.
Oh, yeah. This young beater weeder. F*** him, don't feed him. I don't love him. I don't need him. I just stuff him in a Beamer, take him to the track and leave him.
Denise Tejada, you know, we're so struck by the rap music that you've produced into these pieces, because, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of rap, and some of the artists say that, oh, it's just fantasy, it doesn't have anything to do with reality, or it's, you know, it's exaggerated, but you can hear in juxtaposing it with your reporting just how real it is.
Yeah, and, you know, we didn't have to dig deep to find these songs, and these are all Oakland rappers. And I'm not saying that every Oakland rapper raps about this, but those who do have either themselves grew up in that lifestyle, or have seen it, or, you know, been a pimp themselves, so they know what they're talking about. So you know, it was just it just molded perfectly with the story. Everything that the girls mention are In fact, in these songs as well.
Denise Tejada from Youth Radio. I want to bring in another guest now. Nola Brantley is with us. She's executive director and co-founder of an organization. The acronym is MISSY. It stands for Motivating, Inspiring, Supporting, and Serving Sexually Exploited Youth. Nola Brantley, good to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
Give us a sense of how widespread this is on the streets of Oakland in particular, but in general, teenage prostitutes being trafficked, being exploited.
Right. So there really is no such thing as a teenage prostitute. There's only a sexually abused child, a child of rape, a sexually exploited child, a commercially sexually exploited child. The problem is very widespread in Oakland, for sure, but also in other cities all around the nation that have similar makeup in terms of the crime rate, in terms of the resources available, in terms of the people living at or below the poverty line, the number of group homes and foster care homes in a concentrated area. So there are similar characteristics that cause it to be widespread in Oakland as well as other areas throughout our nation.
And what are some of the commonalities that you see? What kind of characteristics or situations tend to cut across, you know, all these different young women?
So I think there's, you know, three or four really core conditions that cut across all of the victims, regardless of the individual cases. I think that one core condition is poverty. And it can play itself out in things that range from the child ending up on the streets because they were trying to meet their basic needs of food, clothing, and shelter, all the way to a child being woed with gifts because the family doesn't have the resources to do the extras. All the way to a child growing up in a community, because all the areas of prostitution, all the tracks are allowed to exist in poor communities. So if poverty is one of your risk factors, you have the opportunity and the disadvantage as a young child to be walking past areas of prostitution all your life and normalizing the activity. So I think poverty is a big one. Another one, even for children who don't live in poverty, is abuse. And this can be physical abuse, sexual abuse, or neglect. Nationally, 70 to 90% of commercially sexually exploited children were sexually abused during earlier childhood. In Alameda County, we found it at about 95%. So sexual abuse specifically, but abuse in general. A child trying to leave the home to go to a place that they perceive as being safer or being rescued by somebody because they feel like there's something they need to be rescued from.
And so maybe underlying it as well is a lack of self-esteem.
Well, the lack of self-esteem comes from the abuse. It comes from living in poverty and being part of a capitalistic society where we find a lot of our value attached to material things.
And Charmaine Bach, give us a sense on the streets of Oakland or in Alameda County, how many young women are we talking about who are out there on any given day or at any given time?
There's really no way to put an exact number on the number of girls that are out there. But I can tell you that in terms of the cases that we've prosecuted since the human trafficking law passed in Alameda County in California, in 2006, on January 1st to October 18th, when we last looked at our statistics, we charged 177 defendants with human trafficking charges.
And these are the pimps.
Yes, exactly. And convicted 116. But when we say pimps, we cast the net broadly. So it's not just the pimps, but it's also the enforcers. And we don't call them, just like we don't call the children prostitutes, they're victims. We don't call the traffickers pimps because the U.S. State Department reported that the sale and purchase of children for sex is the second largest industry in our country and has become a multi-billion dollar industry that is expected to surpass the illicit trade in guns and narcotics within 10 years. That's a 2004 June statistic from the U.S. Department of State.
How tough is it to prosecute or, you know, even arrest them? I mean, to get one of these young women to testify against them?
It's extremely challenging. We've had 116 convictions. However, there are a few things operating. One is that resources are limited in terms of going out there and doing the work. Two, it's extremely difficult to ensure that the girls are on the train when the train pulls into the courtroom. And it's only because of partnerships with organizations like Missy and other service providers that we're able to work towards, first and foremost, stabilization of these children. And should they decide to want to participate, to then instituting a program such as Safety Net, that's actually something that NOLA had a great role in creating.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Safety Net, you know, at this point for me, it's an idea and a concept. And so it's really exciting. It's something that I contribute to, but Charmaine definitely was the lead on that. And it's around really making sure that when we identify a child that is able to participate in the prosecution of their perpetrator, that we're really wrapping around them from the community, from law enforcement, from social services to protect them. And so this is something that is being attempted. I would like to see it be something that happens. And so I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to present it as a need that's been filled, because there is a great need to protect the children that are cooperating in prosecution. And we have, you know, in some ways failed at that. And we need to do a better job. So I'm excited about the opportunities that Safety Net provides for us. And I'm glad the district attorney's office has provided that opportunity.
What are the risks that these young women face in coming forward and, you know, blowing the whistle?
Well, yeah, there's so many risks. I mean, one of the very first risks is the fact that oftentimes they come from the same communities as the individuals that are exploiting them. Another risk would be the fact that a lot of these young ladies, after testifying, and some of them are in juvenile hall at the point that they testify for the prosecution, they are then placed in group homes or foster care homes, sometimes that don't provide the adequate amount of support and supervision and care that they need. They oftentimes will run away from placements after testifying. We have had some success, though, with some good placements that have connected with the DA's office as well as with Missy, where girls have testified and been able to go to other placements that are more like safe houses, where they have thrived and done very well. So we're starting to do some move in a different direction, but there just is a lot of work that still needs to be done in that area.
And to what extent are the, I know you don't like to use the word pimps, but just for shorthand, are they organized? In other words, if one is arrested and is being prosecuted, is there a network of them that then go after one of these young women to stop them from talking?
So there's different levels of organization within the pimps and different levels of sophistication. So the answer to your question would be yes, and it can also be no. You know what I mean? Depending on the pimps that we're talking about. But are there pimps connected to these children that are operating at that level of sophistication, threatening not only the children, but also our law enforcement officers and agencies? Yes, most definitely.
Yeah. And Denise Tejada, what is your sense of what is a day like in the lives of these young women?
When we asked Brittany and Darlene what that meant for them, for Brittany in particular, she said that she would wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and be out in the street, and you know, her pimp would take her to this photo studio in Oakland. I don't know what photo studio, but and they would take pictures of her that they would then distribute online and post ads, and then she would go out in the streets of Oakland. And also, she was also working in Sacramento. So depending on the location and city that they were in, she would just go in the street and, you know, get picked up by guys, and then also get phone calls through the ads that were posted by the photo studio. So it was from 5 o'clock in the morning to like 2 p.m., two at night.
And how many tricks are they turning? How much money are they bringing in?
A lot of them said that from 500, like Brittany, her minimum was 500, and then
sometimes
$500, and then the max that she's ever made was 7,000
in a day.
In a day, yeah. And this is working both online and on the street. So a lot of these girls that we spoke to are not just simply standing outside; they're also working online, and so you know. They're multitasking, and since there's a huge demand for them.
And Charmaine Bach, what's a typical age for these young women, and you know, how early do some of them get dragged into it?
Well, we see them as young as 11 and 12, and we focus in the heat unit on minors, on children under the age of 18.
Mm-hmm. Is that square with what you've seen, Nola Brantley?
Absolutely. And what I want us to remember, because we can have this conversation about commercially sexually exploited children, and we can feel very empathetic and sympathetic towards the children. But can we remember that the average age of entry into prostitution all across our nation is 12 years old? And how do we shift this empathy and sympathy that we have towards these children towards the adult population of prostitutes in general? Because on average, if their age of entry is 12 years old, the level of response and services and priority that we have on them is pretty pitiful, to say the least.
One thing we haven't talked about is the parents. Where are the parents?
Absolutely. So what we see through Missy in terms of the parents is we have a lot of children that were already removed from their family homes due to abuse and neglect. A lot of it included drug addiction that led to neglect and abuse. We have a lot of parents that are mentally ill and living in poverty, so don't have the resources or access or aren't open to the mental health services that are available. We had a lot of parents that are incarcerated. We have issues that cross over, like racism and oppression and, you know, lots of things that intersect with this form of abuse. So I would say there are some parents connected to the children that we see that are fighting hard to save their lives. But for the most part, the children don't have parents that are present.
Are there parents who are present and profiting from this as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Charmaine Bach, to what extent do you go after them?
We haven't had recently in our unit cases involving parents, but I can tell you that we cast the net of trafficking quite broadly.
Okay, and we're going to leave it there. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk much more about this topic of trafficking in young women, underage women in Oakland. 866-733-6786 is the number if you want to join our conversation. Again, 866-733-6786, or you can email your comments to forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Much more to talk about. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning for Michael Krasny. In this hour, we're talking about a two-part series that Youth Radio did called Trafficked. It looks at exploited young women in Oakland, trafficking in sex. And our guests are the reporter from Youth Radio, Denise Tejada. Also here, Charmaine Bach. She is the head of the Human Exploitation and Trafficking Watch Unit with the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. And Nola Brantley, executive director and co-founder of MISSI. That's Motivating, Inspiring, Supporting, and Serving Sexually Exploited Youth. We're going to talk with them in a moment. Again, the number to call if you want to join our conversation, 866-733-6786. Here's another clip from that series. Last spring, Darlene, one of the former prostitutes featured in the Youth Radio story, interviewed girls in high school who were prostituting themselves, and she asked this one girl what circumstances were like at home.
All right, living at home for me was very hard. We didn't have many resources. Me and my little brother would go to sleep with nothing to eat. My mama didn't have enough money to pay her bills, pay for rent. My mother was doing drugs. She did it all, crack, powder, you know, the usual shit. So I put it upon myself to go out there and go get this money. But at the same time, I didn't do it just for myself. I also had been wrapped around a male, and we just decided to get this money together. So I'm listening to him. I'm listening to him telling me, like, we could do this together. We're going to have cars, money, clothes, jewelry, everything. But it didn't come out to be like that. I would go out there and handle my business. But then when I bring the money back, it's like I would bring all the money back to him. I wouldn't have nothing for myself.
Charmaine Bach from the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. Give us a sense of how profitable this business is for these men who are luring these women into this business.
Sadly, there is no better buck than selling a child for sex these days. There's no better return on your investment. The overhead is low. They are forced to produce an approximate $500 a day quota. And the risk to the traffickers is low because many of these girls suffer from Stockholm syndrome and are bound.
Describe what that is.
Stockholm syndrome is where you identify with your captor. We've seen it in the news way back. Let's say Patty Hearst, you know, left the Hearst castle and stayed away. And so the profit is so significant. In fact, the Polaris report projected that with one trafficker with four girls working for him, stands to make approximately $632,000 a year tax-free. Hmm. That's why I say, sadly, there's no better bang for your buck.
Better than drug dealing.
Right. And as a result, we are seeing many, many drug dealers leave drug dealing because the risks now are clear to drug dealers. And the overhead is there. You've got to actually buy the dope, cut it up, package it, sell it. Whereas these children, you don't need chains to enslave them. They are bound to you through psychological bondage.
And Nola Brantley, talk more about that. What is it that keeps these young women bound emotionally and otherwise to these guys?
Well, I think the number one thing is fear. And so the children are systematically, you know, taught to fear the exploiter. And so they oftentimes fear for their lives. They fear for being beat. They fear for retribution against their family and friends. And then there's also a sense of security. Unfortunately, sometimes what the families as well as the public systems has provided has been so full of lack. And it has been so full of distance. And it's been so full of insecurity and instability for the child that even the stability of being with the trafficker, even if it includes them being severely abused, is the choice that they make amongst no choices. And I just want to say again that there is no such thing as a teen or child prostitute, only a child of sexual abuse, rape, and exploitation.
I want to bring our listeners into this in a moment, but first I want to go to Holly Joshi. She's a former member of the Human Trafficking Task Force with the Oakland Police Department. She now works as the OPD's Public Information Officer. And Holly Joshi, how big a priority is all of this for you?
Oh, this is definitely one of our number one priorities, and we do still have a human trafficking task force. We have 5 members assigned to the task force, and they work directly with the district attorney's office and the non-government groups such as MISSI and BayWAR. So we are still on top of this.
When you say on top of it, I mean, Oakland has a lot of law enforcement problems, and we keep reading about the diminishing number of police officers there because of retirements and budget cuts. Do you have the resources you need?
of course, we would always need and desire extra resources. Like I said, we have five officers that are assigned to the human trafficking unit, and that is all they do. And thankfully, I believe it's two of those positions are grant funded at this time, so we have not had to cut into the human trafficking unit in recent years. I don't know what the future holds as far as funding those positions, but at this point, it is still a fully funded unit, and they're going to continue to move forward. Every week, they're out there doing undercover operations, whether it's on the street rescuing the girls or doing internet stings to try and rescue the girls in that way.
And you worked undercover, didn't you, as a prostitute?
I did.
What was that like? What was that like?
I mean, it's a very scary thing. You know, I'm a fully trained police officer, and I've been one for, you know, almost 10 years. And for me to be standing out there and knowing that I'm going to be approached by pimps and solicited to work for them was a very scary thing. And I know that I had, you know, a gun, and I have other police officers really close to respond. So just imagine a 12, 13, or 14-year-old girl standing out there knowing that that's what's going on and that that's her real life.
Nola Brantley, how do you feel about the way law enforcement handles this issue?
I think that, like other systems, law enforcement is working with limited resources. And I think that the main thing that law enforcement needs to respond to this issue is safe places in terms of facilities and assessment centers that can keep the children not locked in, but safe and in, keep the predators out, and create an alternative for law enforcement from arrest. One thing that I do recommend, you know, for the Oakland Police Department on behalf of Missy and for law enforcement in general, is that when they do take these kids into custody as child abuse victims, they use their local child advocacy forensic interviewing centers. The one for the Oakland Police Department is Calico, to provide child abuse interviews for these children that are more conducive to their form of abuse, to their stage in development, and it creates less trauma for the child themselves.
And Holly Joshi, how does OPD distinguish between a 16-year-old girl who's on the streets versus one who's 19 or 20?
Well, clearly a 16-year-old girl who's on the street is a juvenile. She's a child. So that's the first distinguishing factor. And every single girl under the age of 18 that is rescued off the street, they're all treated as victims. That is the philosophy at the Oakland Police Department. I think that Charmaine Bach has probably already spoke to the fact that as far as law enforcement is concerned, we are definitely on the cutting edge of looking at the girls like victims and treating them in that manner. I do understand what Ms. Brantley is speaking of when she says we need a safe alternative, because as of now, we do make the assessment to try and find a place for the girls to go, whether it be some of the girls, their homes are fit for them to return, but that's not often the case. So sometimes law enforcement makes the determination that in order to keep the girls safe, because again, they're not presenting like victims, even though we all know they are, and we have the fear that they could run directly back to their pimps if they're not in a secure facility, we do make the decision to take them to juvenile hall. Once they are in juvenile hall, they are separated from the general population and given the outreach that they need while they're there. But definitely, it is not the best alternative for this population.
All right. Holly Joshi from the Oakland Police Department, thanks so much for joining us. I'll let you go now. And let's go to our listeners. Diane is on the line in Burlingame. Good morning.
Hi, I'd like to know, and I'm dovetailing on the last comment, if these are exploited children, then why are these young women being arrested before they're being put into your program to rescue them? They get a police record, they get stigmatized, they're put in with hardened criminals. It seems to me that if you're going to rescue children, you can find someplace else to put them besides juvenile hall and besides a prison.
That's a good point. Charmaine Bach, what's your response?
You know, it's an interesting irony that occurred when actually NOLA and the Alameda County District Attorney's Office and many others tried to pass legislation to address precisely this issue. And the concept came up of actually detaining them, but not arresting them. Trying to shift the way in which they were held legally in order to provide them services. And this was legislation that the Alameda County District Attorney's Office, in connection with Assemblymember Sondre Swanson, drafted. The group that objected first and loudest was the ACLU, because you can't constitutionally keep anybody without probable cause. And the law as it stands now doesn't have a mental health hold capability that is focused upon these children. And I think that it should be such that we can give them the care and the treatment they need. But we need to recognize that they are under the spell of these traffickers, much like a religious cult. So and until and unless there is something better, we have to make lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah. Diane, thanks for the call. Denise, what's your sense of how these young women view law enforcement? Do they see them as sort of the enemy or what?
Some of the interviews, because we've spoken to several girls, and they don't have a good perception of law enforcement. And the reason why is because a lot of them, or some of them, have, in a way, police officers have given the option of, like, hey, you either give me services and I won't take you in. So, and I'm not, you know, and it's something that came across with a lot of girls that we've spoken to. So not only can they, you know, they don't have a good system placed at home, and, you know, they can, the pimp is like the only person that they can somewhat trust. And then, you know, law enforcement are supposed to protect them. But if they are giving these options of, like, hey, exchange sex over your freedom, then it's like, who do they end up trusting?
Nola Brantley, have you heard that story as well?
I have heard that story. And I'll say I also have heard stories from victims where they've had a positive interaction with law enforcement. And I do know young ladies who, you know, were, and I don't like the term rescued, but let's say who were gotten off the streets temporarily by law enforcement through a positive interaction. I also know young ladies that have had that experience of exchanging, you know, sex for their freedom with law enforcement. And I'm a survivor of exploitation as well. And my perpetrator was a law enforcement officer in the great city that we're in right now. So I definitely know that there's that risk there. But I think that there's that risk with teachers and with advocates and with lawyers and with therapists and doctors. And so I wouldn't want to go pigeonholing law enforcement into being the only ones that acts inappropriately with children, because all the individuals that are picking them up are adults and they usually have jobs.
Have there been any cases, and maybe I'll ask you, Charmaine Bach, where police officers who have tried to do this have been prosecuted or at least tossed off the force?
I've heard of it in other counties, in other jurisdictions, but I can tell you that despite what is being said here today by the other speakers, that when you compare the law enforcement in Alameda County and the Bay Area to law enforcement in other jurisdictions, we are blessed to have enlightened law enforcement that is actually partnering with agencies to try to make a difference and really fighting hard towards trying to raise awareness, outreach to the community, and implement innovative programs.
Back to the phones now, and Richa is on the line from Milpitas. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I had a question for the panel, actually, too. And these are mostly observations, trying to understand, is there a silver lining to the clouds? It sounds like from previous comments that education is not helping, because this one girl in high school turned to this prostitution as her means of survival. And they also had comments about how the victims are actually, they prefer to go back to the pimps rather than talk to the law enforcement agencies. So, I mean, is there any hope, or is this just something that cannot be resolved?
Good question. Nola Brantley, we just read this morning in the Chronicle that the dropout rate among African-Americans in the Oakland schools is 40%. Schools are obviously failing in a lot of ways. Homes are failing. How much is there hope? And if so, where does it come from?
There's most definitely hope. There's most definitely hope. And we have seen a lot of the children that have been victimized in this way come through this. They're doing well now. They're going to college. They're contributing back to society. And so what I think is needed is resources that really are committed to working with the children long term, providing some consistency, some stability, and responding to their real needs, to their basic needs, to their emergency needs, to their need to feel a sense of family and affection and belonging. And I think one thing that's also needed, that's a huge gap right now in services, is safe, loving homes, whether they're foster care homes, group homes, family homes, safe houses. Just there's a big gap in the number of safe, loving, stable homes that we need available for this population.
Denise, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I do. You know, if you look at the stories of just Brittany and Darlene, they're both out of it and they're both in school and they're giving back to that community. So I think once organizations like Missy and others, you know, make it a, have a commitment to help these girls, there is hope. Like Brittany and Darlene.
All right. Thanks for the call. And again, that number to call if you do want to join us with a comment or question, 866-733-6786. Myra is on the line in Mill Valley. Good morning.
Hi. You know, one group that I think seems to just get a pass in all this are the men who are purchasing this sex. And, you know, I realize it's probably difficult to go after them as a group, but on the other hand, I think that in a capitalist society, if there's a demand for something, there's always going to be somebody out there who's willing to supply it, if somebody's willing to pay for something. So, you know, I don't like the fact that the group of men who are buying it just seem not to be addressed at all and just seem to be getting a pass.
Charmaine Bach?
We take this extremely seriously. Our office is actually right now currently prosecuting a John for a felony. And the jury trial is in progress. And John had sex with a minor under the age of 14, a 13-year-old. And we are able in that instance, based on the law, to charge a felony.
Is the young woman cooperating?
She has cooperated in the past, let's say.
She's having second thoughts.
It's a pending case. We've had certainly issues, as I've mentioned. Ensuring participation from start to finish is a challenge for a variety of reasons that span the range, generally speaking, from fear against the trafficker to a bond to the trafficker, where you see them as someone that's going to protect you no matter what.
What do you think about that, Nola Brantley, the idea of having these young women prosecute, help prosecute the Johns? I mean, they're huge risks. And what's the upside for them other than getting them off the streets, of course?
Let's just take a few steps back and look at how we approach the Johns nationally for the general population of prostitutes and then for children. So all around the nation, in every city where prostitution takes place, we arrest 2, 3, 4 times the amount of prostitutes as we do Johns, even though there's a number of Johns for each prostitute. So, you know, regardless of, you know, what all around the nation, our response to the actual demand side of this has not been where it should be at. We arrest a lot of the prostitutes, more so even than the pimps or the Johns.
Why do you think that is?
I think they're the easiest one to arrest.
Why?
Because
they're part of a transaction.
Of a transaction. They just seem to be, especially when it comes to the children, they seem to be the easiest one to arrest. The Johns represent a lot of different people and parts of our society. So I'll just say that first and foremost. And there's been people from judges all the way down to, you know, construction workers that represent that population. So I think that's a huge part of it. With the pimps, I think it's very difficult because of the amount of evidence and cooperation that the district attorney needs to make those cases. And the victims are usually very terrified and connected based on that fear to the pimp. So I think that's why it's difficult sometimes to arrest and prosecute them. So somebody needs to be arrested, right, to alleviate the problem. When you have citizens and everybody's calling in about a problem of prostitution, there needs to be some response, I feel like, by law enforcement to satisfy the general public. And oftentimes I feel like the default is the victim themselves.
Charmaine?
You know, I mean, shame on me if I drive by a child on the street at 3 a.m. and do nothing about it. And as our law stands right now, you can't take that child and deliver her to the service industry without some legal steps in between, one of which involves probable cause. And maybe one day our laws will change so that we can have a different approach. But right now, as I said, we're doing the best with the tools that are available. And, you know, many people, myself included a long time ago, drove past a child on the corner and thought, you know, why doesn't she just get a job at McDonald's? And so it's not just law enforcement's issue. Let me be very clear about that. These children, my boss, Nancy O'Malley, the district attorney of Alameda County, says these are everyone's children. And so it's not just law enforcement's issue. Let's not just put this on law enforcement's head. These are all of our children. There are community members that drive by those children. There are businesses and areas where these children are exploited that turn away and look through these children. And so we are all joining together as a community, and that is what Heat Watch is about. Heat Watch is about bringing everyone together to recognize that these are our children and to come up with a collaborative, multi-system, multi-jurisdictional response to rescuing them, because it's not law enforcement's problem. They can't be everywhere all of the time.
All right. Thanks for the call, Myra. Let's get to another caller now. Hugh is on the line in Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning. At some point, maybe some websites for service organizations we can contribute money to. But the reason I'm calling is sometimes I drive by a liquor store that's not far from a high school, just off of 580. And there's a lot of high school students who seem to go there for, I'm not sure, lunch or maybe other things. And there's groups of young men around talking to girls as they go by and things like that. Now, I'm not sure how much of an issue that is for points of entry, whether that's small or large or in between, but wondering about liquor stores and other things near open campuses and why in New York those types of facilities can be moved a certain distance without getting the state involved, but here in California that appears to be more of a challenge.
Nola Brantley?
In terms of recruitment happening around high schools, yes, it does. And it also happens around junior high school. So whether or not that's exactly what the caller is seeing, I'm not sure. But have we heard about girls being recruited during their lunch breaks, after school, before school, around their high schools and junior high schools throughout the city of Oakland and even across the county of Alameda? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what can you do to interfere, to intervene at that point?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of this has to do with the school safety and the school being aware of this issue and being aware that there's recruitment happening around their campus. So what Missy has done in the past is we have went out to individual school sites and done school safety trainings around this specific issue with the staff and administration. So I think there are certain things that the staff and administration can be aware of, such as what this caller has observed.
All right, Hugh, thanks for the call. And good suggestion on the websites. Maybe, Nola, you can tell us where folks can go to Missy. How do you find it?
Yeah, for sure. To make a donation to Missy or learn more about the organization, we are www.missey.org. We're currently in the process of collecting donations and unwrapped gifts and gift cards for our holiday gift drive for our clients. And so we'd appreciate any and all support that can be given.
And while we're at it, Denise Tejada, why don't you give out the website for Youth Radio?
Mm-hmm. It's www.youthradio.org/trafficked. And you can find more interviews of girls who have been in the interviews that Darlene had, and also other organizations that are like Missy's that are working to.
There was also a pimp business plan that you uncovered, a handwritten business plan.
We have a handwritten business plan.
Describe that a little bit.
It's, you know, it's kind of scary to see that this it's a business plan where the pimp really says that he wants to expand his business, and he says he's going after girls who are in jail, who are really broken down, don't have a family. So it's really scary to know that they are actually taking this profession so seriously and willing to take it a bit higher and go.
Excuse me, and as Charmaine, as you said earlier, it's a good investment.
Right, and the business plan actually came from our office. In one of our cases. And I'd also like to give the number for our tip line, which is what we hand out to the community and to all organizations, really, if they have or see suspected child sex trafficking, to call 510 27 510-208-4959, or they can go to www.alcoda.org. And that is where they can learn more about how to partner with all of us, law enforcement, provider communities, systems, and community members in the Heat Watch program, which is now regional and is being extended to all nine Bay Area counties.
I'll just give that number again, 510-208-4959.
Right.
I just want to say one thing. During my investigation, we went to the streets of International, and it was not even 2 o'clock, and we saw a girl bleeding from her mouth. And
it's so, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
2 o'clock in the afternoon, and so we wanted to find out. My producer and I, Brent Myers, wanted to find out what was going on. So we went around asking some of the business owners, and we found one business owner in particular who said he saw the whole thing. He witnessed it. He saw two guys punch the girl in the mouth and stole a couple of things from her purse and just left her there. And one of my questions was, well, why didn't you call the police? And one of the things he said was, we could be target. We could be next. Our business is here. Because also keep in mind that the pimps are within a block away from the girls watching them. And so if they see some of the business owners approach the girl and ask her to help her or call the police, they're afraid that their businesses could be targeted. So I think this is calling the Heat Watch. I think it's like a huge important thing, just because as community members who drive by and are afraid to call, then, you know, this could be like a place that could be considered safe for them.
And it's anonymous. And let me say that Nancy O'Malley came up with the term Heat Watch because it's based on Neighborhood Watch. And it's this model that's been tried and true and has worked in our country. And so we're hoping that everyone sees the idea of community involvement and, you know, multi-system community involvement, not just law enforcement, but citizens, businesses, providers, systems, all of us coming together under one umbrella.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Charmaine Bach from the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. Thanks to you. Thanks also Denise Tejada from Youth Radio. Thanks for bringing so much attention to this issue.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And also thanks to Nola Brantley from Missy and earlier in the hour, Holly Joshi from the Oakland Police Department. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer, here for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.